Thank you for listening to episode number 30 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Before we get started with our interview with Kyle Sather, we want to do a quick shout out to our sponsor, Austin Jaro. Austin Jaro is Duluth's original running store, and definitely give them a quick visit for any holiday gifts you might want, or winter running apparel, shoes, socks, food, whatever you need. They're up in the mall area in Duluth here, 917 West Central Entrance, or you can give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks, Austin Jaro.
All right, and we are joined in the interview portion of the Duluth Rundown podcast with our good friend and often mentioned, Mr. Kyle Sather. In fact, Kyle has been on the podcast briefly before, but never as a direct interview subject. So today, Kyle will be our interview subject. Kyle, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
First of all, before we get started, Kyle, I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time. I see Mike on the podcast on the screen every 3 weeks. I haven't seen Kyle in a long time. What's new? What's new with you? How's your running been going? How's life?
Running's been going well. I'm just trying to think right now off the top of my head the last time I've seen you, Tony, and it probably has been when I run past your house there. Anytime I'm running, I look to see if you're hanging out on the deck, and I frantically flail my arms, and sometimes you're out there, sometimes you're not. But running's been going as steady as I can ask for, really. I've been staying healthy, and I know I wanted to come on today to talk about pacing, so that's really a lot of what I've been doing this year, too. So I've been enjoying my running. What else is new? I did start a new job earlier this year, so I took on a new job in early May. These days, I'm working as a psychotherapist in mental health at Insight Counseling, and trying to get into the world of sports psychology and really just building my craft from there. So I have a few new modalities that I've been trained in, and I've enjoyed using them so far. But of course, in the world that we're in right now, it's just been a day-to-day sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think your topic about, you know, the pacing and kind of getting through this pandemic is a really interesting one. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you kind of have to say about that stuff. And before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about your running background. I mean, I know some of it because you and I have been friends for a long time now. And but tell our listeners a little bit how you got into running, just kind of where it all evolved as you moved up to Duluth and where we're at today.
Yeah. Okay. So I suppose my running started in 10th grade of high school. I ran some track and field. I went to high school at Prior Lake. And the only reason I started track and field was because I missed baseball tryouts. Growing up, I always played basketball, football, and baseball. And I missed baseball tryouts that year. I always played in-house and never with the high school team. Mm-hmm. So that spring, I was looking for something to keep me busy. And I joined track and field. And I really fell in love with it, really. At that time, I was running the 4x4. I did some hurdling. I did the high hurdles. But I was much better at the 300 intermediate hurdles. And that was sort of what got me started in running. Fast forward a little bit, I came to Duluth in 2010, and I've been here. And I really started getting into running. I started working at Duluth Running Company in 2012. And of course, working in that environment with everyone else there, either being on a cross-country team or having experience in running there, it really kind of rubs off on you. It's hard not to have that influence you in some way. So I got into 5Ks and 10Ks, and then eventually ran my first marathon in 2013. And then eventually I started this thing called a run streak in 2016, and I've ran every day since then. So I'm currently on a run streak of over 4 years. You might ask what day I'm on. So today is day 1,546 consecutive days of at least 1 mile.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. I definitely don't take it for granted. It's me in my craft as a therapist a lot. It's just how I process my day and digest everything in my personal life or what I came across in the office. Yeah, that's a little bit about my running and where I've come so far.
Let's talk about that streak for a little bit, because I think, to me, that's it's a unique thing, especially to start to get up into those numbers. I know a lot of folks that kind of get on some mini streaks and they get, you know, 6 months or maybe even up to a year kind of a thing. But getting 5 year range, of course, you know, in the streak world, some of those people are like 20, 25 years straight or whatever. But yeah. Still, at your numbers, that's pretty impressive. Do you feel like that's starting to become a part of your identity now?
I think so. Like now, if anytime I've like Google searched my name, it's usually something related to cross country. Not even my current job, but I've done like 2 stories with local media about my run streak or just running in general. I know multiple people who have started a run streak of their own and maintained it for multiple years themselves, or a half a year. Many people that I've ran with who have started a streak of their own. So I think for myself, there's a little bit of a sense of responsibility with it. Like, I have to do this because people know me as, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. Is there any a sense of pressure with the responsibility, or is it more of like kind of a privilege sort of a thing?
Like I said, it's something that I try not to take for granted. So it's definitely more of a privilege. And I think in terms of this streak has definitely incorporated a lot of luck. I wouldn't have gotten this far without a lot of luck and, pacing, of course. Like, there are some days where I just have to get out for 10 or 15 minutes. Like, I've been fortunate to avoid injuries. I've had many near severe ankle sprains and rolls. I haven't broken any bones. I haven't pulled any muscles. I've fallen and I've hurt my back a couple times. Earlier this year, I ran through influenza, and I'm like 90% certain I also had COVID at that same time. So those days, like, that was the only thing I did. I would wait until there was some sunlight, and I would just jog up and down my block until my watch bust. And I jump back inside and shiver underneath my blankets. So some days that's all I did. But yeah, it's definitely more of a privilege thing. I don't take it for granted, and I think about that day where I won't run. So eventually, I know that day will come, and I have to adapt and change just like anybody else. But for now, it's something I don't take for granted.
Let me ask a little bit about of the streak and just how you feel. Like, I imagine at this point, running a mile, you know, every day, physically, no problem, well, more than a mile, but you know, we'll just say every once in a mile, physically, not much of a problem, right? That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Are there times when you're just like, oh, I am so sore, this is gonna hurt?
That's usually after a big race. After or earlier this year when we did that frozen 4 hour Mike or the Northwoods Winter Championships. It's usually those winter long runs where the next day, like, oh, all I want to do is 10 or 15 minutes. I don't want to do anything more than that. Those are some of the tougher runs, I think, especially when there's less daylight to work with. And it takes more time to run. putting on all those layers just to get out the door. That's those are the days that are the more difficult ones for sure.
Right. And what? How do you get out the door on those cold ones, especially or cold, or if you're tired, or you know, what keeps you motivated when that mile is daunting?
I'll make something up, like, well, maybe this will get me closer to some sort of step goal for the day, and breaking it down into a one day at a time sort of mentality. If I can get through this, eventually I'll be less sore. Maybe tomorrow will be warmer. The forecast says no, it's probably going to be negative 30. That's still going to be cold, but we can get through today and just enjoy it. There are some days where those days you're like, oh, I still have to run. If I'm able to switch it to, I get to, and I can try to find something to enjoy out of it. I think that's the key in those more tricky days.
I'm kind of curious, Kyle. I think you're a good representation, and like a lot of runners, start with, you know, a team environment and then move up to maybe a 5K or 10K, move up to a marathon. So it's almost, do you see, first of all, if you could comment on kind of that progression in your career and like each kind of milestone or your mentality as you, you know, look to a new distance or a new challenge. But also, I want to ask you if the streak challenge was kind of a progression in your running career or just something, hey, I'm going to try this and see how far I can get or otherwise.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to the progression where you're constantly challenging yourself or looking for that next step. Hey, I did a 5K in this certain time, or I ran a 10K and I'm not sore. I still think back to that the first time I ran a half marathon, and the very next day I was walking down the stairs backwards because my calves were just screaming at me. And all my years in college, I've chosen to live on the top floor of whatever house I'm in. And very regrettably, those days after a half or a marathon, you're coming back down the stairs like, this was a poor decision. If I jumped straight into a marathon, I'm not sure I would have had as much interest in doing that. And I think the run streak has definitely helped me in terms of taking that next step and progress. In the last 2 years, I haven't had many opportunities in terms of a starting line to prove that, but there are different ways to work around it. Mike here helped pace me to a new 5K PR in May. So I'm not sure I would have ran that PR if I wasn't constantly getting out there every day. Actually, I'm on pace this year to top 2,000 miles for the second year in a row. And it'll be, hopefully, this will be my ninth year of running more miles than the previous year. So it's been a lot of just stacking on top of one another and a very cumulative experience. That's like Tony has talked a lot about, running is cumulative, your training is cumulative, long term rather than individual workouts.
Right.
Yeah, that's super cool. That will definitely pay dividends. And for nine straight years. And how old are you, Kyle?
I'm 28.
28. So, I mean, you're going to have, you've got more, you're still kind of developing and building all that run strength too, that, you know, you've got more of kind of increasing mileages, you know, over the years too. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. To think that we're still like approaching that window where they say that runners are our most fit in our 30s and early 40s, to think I still have that ahead of me. I think that's where more of that privilege and like gratefulness for and in the play.
Yeah, for sure. I like that you talk a lot about, you know, gratitude, especially with regards to the streak, but just running in general. And I think that's an extremely important thing. I try to make that one of my four main points when I'm training people, is that gratitude is very important. Talk a little bit about that, not only within the streak, but just running in general for yourself.
Well, the big thing, and one observation I've had in this year is just how much community that I've developed in running on its own. Like, a lot of the people and friendships who are the people who are closest to me these days, I've met in through running in some capacity, whether it's common people coming into the store or people I ran with through training groups or at races. You start to recognize many familiar faces, and you can count on them to know that they're in your corner. This year, of course, I've been running a lot more independently and on my own, and I think I probably wouldn't have been running as much this year if I didn't have that streak already kind of fortified over the last couple years in the making. So I think having that streak in my back pocket and knowing that there is a sense of responsibility to it, at least in my perspective, that's helped. But yeah, that just the community around me has been huge in my experience. And Duluth's been really great for that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that kind of molds well into, you know, the topic of today's conversation that you had brought up as an idea to talk about, and just kind of how we can, as runners, get through this pandemic with the fact of, you know, fewer, if any, races, fewer opportunities to train with your friends kind of side by side. And so so many of us are sort of going at it alone here for the last, what are we at now? 7, 8 months or so, 9 months, something like that. And how to get through it mentally. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I could start with a few general observations. And how about I start with a couple questions? One thing that's come to mind for me currently is, where are you in the quote unquote race? Where are you in the race right now? And I guess what I mean by that is something that I saw recently from a different coach and podcast who I listen to and enjoy. And I think I saw him through you first, Tony. His name is Steve Magness.
Yeah.
He tweeted the other day something to the effect of, we're at that point in the race where you can start to see the finish line, but that's also when it becomes the most difficult and those miles hurt the most, and it's the most exhausting and really irritating. So you still have to ask yourself, where are you in the race? We can't unplug. You can't just say, all right, here we are, we're done.
Right.
There's still a lot of work left to be done, and thinking, where are we in the race? For yourself, everybody respectively is probably at different points.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that. It's like that last third, no matter what the distance, 5K or marathon, the last third of a race is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good analogy that he brings up, that, you know, we're close, we're getting there, but we're not there yet. So still got to maintain that kind of focus.
Right. And go ahead, Mike.
No, that's all I was going to say. It's like, yeah, mile 20 of the marathon, kind of when, you know, you think most of it is over, but that's where you slow down the most too, you know?
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that coin, like, this is we're living in a world where it's easier to know where the finish line is, but right now we're still at a point where that's sort of arbitrary and dependent on what your line of work is, what you do for a living, and kind of where your tools and coping skills are right now. It's different for all of us, and I see a lot of burnout as a therapist. I think, granted, I've worked at my current job now for the last 7 months, but there's definitely been a trend to many people saying, well, I've never seen a therapist before. this is my first time in the office. I don't know what to expect. So people are reaching out for help more often than ever before, which isn't a bad thing. I'm here to try to destigmatize that. Like, it's great that people are looking for help. If you want to get better running, you go see a coach. If you want to start improving like your fitness, you go and see a personal trainer. If you have issues with your mental health, then no wonder. Of course you have some struggles with your mental health these days. You go and see a therapist.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. It's a great thing.
So, yeah, I guess I'm just here to remind people that if you're feeling a bit worn out, it definitely makes sense. If you're a bit exhausted and scared and anxious, I hear you. We're at a point in a race where you might not know where that finish line is. We might have to do this until February or April or June. Who knows? But it's good to take a one day at a time approach as much as you're really able to right now.
What about in terms of kind of staying motivated and staying focused for people who, without races, there isn't that carrot on the stick, that definitive, here's what I'm going for. Like you said, it's more arbitrary. So how can you stay focused in that situation?
So I think the second question that I wrote myself is, beyond where are you in the race, I would also ask, what are your aid stations, or where are your aid stations? Like, who can you go to for that support, and what else do you have in your life, in your toolbox, that fills your bucket? This year in particular, at least when it comes to training, I've done a lot of longer term races. Like, I did this challenge earlier this summer that took 10 weeks to complete, and it was really exhausting, but I think it really helped me practice that day-to-day approach. Like, yeah, the overall number is staggering, but if I can break it up into, okay, I can do this for today, I need to do this by the end of the week, I can have this by the end of the month, and there's still X amount of days left. So what can I do today to serve the long-term goal? And there's a lot of science behind setting miniature goals for yourself, achieving those goals, because that literally gives you a positive feedback loop. It gives you those hits of dopamine to keep you on track for that long-term vision that you have ahead of you. So
that's kind of like, you know, traditional racing, right? Is, you know, you have a race with 6 months out and put together a training program, or get with a coach, and then, you know, every day you kind of check that off the list, and you're one step closer to that start line and the whole experience. And so, yeah, I think for me personally, it's definitely difficult to not have that end goal, which, you know, kind of cycles back to, now I don't have the motivation to check something off every day, and so now I'm just, I feel like almost a streaker, but I'm not. But, you know, every day just getting out, that's like my positive feedback loop. It's like, I did it, but it's not the same for me, anyways, personally speaking.
And you're just speaking to different tools that you have in your kit. You're a pretty well-rounded athlete here, and you're very talented in a lot of different sports, biking, swimming, all these different adventures around town that you've got going. Nice that you have that in your kit, and I guess I'm asking all the listeners here to look at their own life and take inventory of what are some of those other things that I can do on those days where I'm not necessarily motivated to run, but is part of the process that'll get me to that outcome.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it is just being able to kind of find positivity in a lot of different areas. And if you try to just focus on the one area, and then that one area is taken away from you, there can be a feeling of loss a little bit. So if you can somehow find, you know what, okay, so maybe that race that I had planned, that got canceled. Now what? Well, maybe you can get really fit. You know, maybe you can start to work on a streak or build some mileage that you've never done before, or try to work on some speed work or something like that. And that's just in the running avenue alone, let alone some of the other activities that you could do. So I think, to me, I think something like this is a great opportunity for variety.
Yeah. The other thing that I think about is the warning signs. Like, I don't think people necessarily realize when they are burnt out, but in some of my observations personally and in the community around me, I think when I'm most irritated is when I'm doing some doom scrolling. And that's a term that one of folks brought to me is, how much time are you spending on that phone just aimlessly sliding your thumb up and down, doom scrolling, and looking at inflammatory things and commenting and getting in battles with strangers on the internet? Take a step back and ask yourself, who does this serve? Who am I helping by doing this? And what's the end goal here? I think a lot of those people might be a bit burnt out and irritated, picking battles that there's no winner.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that. I personally stopped using all of my social media probably 3-4 months ago, I suppose. Sometime for sure in the summer, and it's been nothing but a positive. I every once in a while I sign into Facebook every once in a while, maybe once a week, to see if there's any notifications I need to respond to or something that's really important. I try not to do any of the home scrolling at all. Instagram I haven't looked at, Twitter I haven't looked at. Just try to, you know, enough to maybe keep in touch if I have to, but I don't miss it one bit, not one bit. And yeah, I'm a big believer that your thoughts make you who you are. And when you are doing that doom scrolling, and surrounded by that negativity and all that information that's coming into you is all negative, that's going to have a serious impact on your literal day-to-day activities and how you view the world and how things work for you. To me, positive thoughts make for a positive life.
Yep. We're really visual creatures. We rely on our vision to analyze and decipher what we see in the world. So if you're spending a lot of time looking at stuff that bothers you or is kind of twisting that knife further, it's not really serving you too well. So look for those warning signs. And that's at least one of them. Just setting boundaries. With everybody working at home here, it's harder to have those boundaries and those transitions. I, for one, am really somebody that enjoys transitions. And I think that run streak that I have going right now is part of that everyday transition. So I know every day I at least have a transition of shutting my computer, putting the clothes on, lacing up my shoes, starting to watch, and stepping out the door. For some people, that was leaving the house, kissing your spouse on the way out the door, driving to work, listening to the radio, whatever it is that you do, those transition, those routines, for some of us, that's gone. And we have to adapt and figure out, okay, what is my transition going to look like? And where are my boundaries with my working from home lifestyle?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great thought too. I agree. Like, just being able to shift some gears and get out of whatever it is that you're doing, because like you say, so many people are working from home now. So there's, I don't know, I think there's probably a little more free time for everybody. And so then what do you do with that free time, and how do you utilize that? It's very important.
I like the idea of kind of the, you know, having that run as your daily, you know, especially as a streaker, Kyle, as kind of your daily transition, that almost like aid station, like you mentioned, that thing, kind of the beacon of positivity in a, you know, time where it's hard to be positive. And And also tying into, you know, races, when races were common, that's what so many runners do. And there's that daily, you know, jog, that workout every week, the long run every week to get you closer to the goal. And I guess what I'm getting at is a run streak something that someone can start where there's not really an end to it per se, but every day gets you closer to lengthening the streak, but there's not really, you know, that end goal per se. How do you mentally approach that in your mind, knowing that there is no race day?
Yeah. It probably starts with a little bit of taking inventory and asking yourself, do I have a spare 15 to 20 minutes sitting around here today?
Mm-hmm.
Is there one less episode of Schitt's Creek or anything else that's on Netflix these days that I could go run instead? Mm-hmm. Is there that TV show that I sit down in front of after work? Is there, how much time do I spend doom scrolling that I could be doing something else? It's a hard thing to do, to get yourself off the couch sometimes after a long day. We're creatures that we're born to avoid suffering. That's what fight and flight is really about at the end of the day. So we want to be comfortable and relaxed, and sometimes getting up and stepping out the door is the more difficult thing to do. But oftentimes the path of least resistance is the hardest one to get yourself back out of.
Yeah, for sure. I think today I ran, I'm kind of nursing a sore ankle, so my mileage is really low, and I just wanted to do a couple of miles today. And in a way, I was less motivated to go run 2 miles than a normal, say, like 14 or 16 miler on a Sunday that I might do. Because I feel like, oh, 2 miles, why bother? Why get dressed for just, you know, all that short amount of time, blah, 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 blah. Finally, I was like, okay, I can sit and come up with excuses for hours if I want to, but if I just go do it, I'll be done. And so sometimes those little things, it does take a little extra kick in the butt.
The other thing I heard recently was also from Steve Magnus on his podcast, The Growth Equation.
Yeah.
Some of these concepts I got from a particular episode of theirs really also kind of talk about the pandemic burnout epidemic. And I think Brad on that podcast, he used the analogy of an EKG. Like, life is a lot like a heart rate monitor. It has some ups and it's got some downs. It's got some transitions and fluctuations in there. But that means you're alive.
Yeah.
If you're sitting around and doing nothing, that line is a little bit flatter, and there's not as much like vibrant something to look forward to. And even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, you're not doing a normal run. Well, what are we training for right now anyway? We're training for life.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. One thing that I like to utilize as a way to stay motivated in times, well, so typically in the off season, I would use this sort of a strategy, but now during the pandemic, it's almost like a giant off season, like an entire calendar year of off season in a way. But I like to think of each run in a way there's almost like less pressure. If you don't have that race, you know, 2 months from now, you kind of feel, if you do have the race 2 months from now, you kind of feel like, oh, I got to nail this workout, or, you know, there's only so many days left to train before it's go time. Now, without that thing out there, I feel like, oh, well, I can just kind of go easy again. It's kind of nice. I don't have this is just pressure, I guess, is the only word I can think of right now, that pressure kind of pushing me into something that maybe I'm not ready for. Kind of approach. Anyway, that's a motivating thing that I've used in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with that personally for sure, because I haven't hardly done any long runs, a little bit of speed work, My mileage has been down. I don't feel the pressure at all, and I like it. You know, and it's really nice on one hand to not have the races. You know, I think that's what so many runners live for, is racing. But when you can't do it, you know, it kind of just invites the joy of running, just to get out, and for mental health back, I think. And it just puts a new perspective. I think every runner, you know, and I like asking this question, so I'm kind of curious what you have to say, or your answer, you know, is every runner has their own main reason, you know, whether it be fitness or weight loss or the mental health or to compete, you know. And I think there's a lot of people have a lot of different reasons, but sometimes and a lot of times there's one main reason that really motivates people. And, you know, for a lot of people, whether it be like personal, you know, the personal kind of goal of, you know, setting a PR, or the competition of, you know, getting top 10 or whatever, you know, can't really do that these days. And so I'm kind of curious too, Kyle, like what your reasons for running have been over the years too, having been a runner for a long time, done a lot of different events and races, and having many different focuses, and now being a streaker. But also, I guess, to kind of get back on track with the conversation, you know, it is interesting to have that less pressure, because there just aren't any races. What can you do, you know?
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely been, I've definitely ran for different reasons depending on the day or the week, even within a streak. And particularly this year, my main approach to the running has been, well, it's something that I can count on. It's something that I have control over. It's within arm's length. And I think the more that you're able to find those things that are in your control, and that would be another sign to look out for when it comes to burnout, is when you're starting to feel a lack of control. Check in with yourself and say, what are those things that I can do to sustain myself? And this year, that's been a change in my priorities. Is there's nothing to compete for. There hasn't been a race to toe the line. There have been a couple races that I have been fortunate to find this year, but that's also incorporated a shift in my goal setting. There's nothing where I'm saying, oh, I want to place top 10, top 5, whatever it is. I want to run a personal best. It's more so I can feel relaxed and feel more at ease at the end of the day, and something to check off the list and, again, be grateful for. Something that I mention a lot in my practice is a daily maintenance plan of sorts. And that goes back to what else is in your toolbox. What are those things that you need to do every day to keep yourself happy and healthy? For me, it just happens to be running. I can count on that more days than not to keep myself relaxed and composed and find some enjoyment and purpose out of.
Yeah.
So Kyle, what else do you have on your list? You started with a few questions. You have anything else on your list there?
Well, I've covered the questions, and I guess I've jumped into some of the tools there and some of the signs to look out for. One other tool that I tend to use pretty often is an acronym that I like to use, and that is the PLEASE acronym. I like to think of it as please take care of yourself. And this comes from DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. They take a little bit of freedom with the different letters in this acronym, but nonetheless, the PL in PLEASE stands for physical illness, with the L underlined in illness. And I think I'm going to look at these letters in the acronym of PLEASE from a running standpoint. So in physical illness, if I want to get out and continue running and sustain a streak or whatever goal I have in mind for that everyday process and that long-term outcome, I have to look at any injuries or how sick I might be. Do I have a runny nose today? Am I a little bit under the weather? Well, maybe this is a day that I can go 10 or 15 minutes and whatever mileage I had written on the calendar, I can push that to a different day. But still good for me to get outside and take care of whatever is ailing me, that flare up in your Achilles or that calf, that sore spot in your hamstring. Find those tools to go see your PT or find that foam roller and break that out. Use that as part of the process. So that's the PL. E is eating, making sure that you're still taking time to make transitions in your everyday life to find ways to nourish yourself and give yourself that energy you need to continue setting and checking off those goals that you have as part of the process. I know I'm one person that really struggles to like eat chewable food in the morning. Like, I just don't have the time. I'm horrible about being a morning person. Like, I really struggle to run in the morning. So often I'm making a smoothie the night before and freezing that and bringing that to work with me and using that as the first thing I eat rather than getting out and running. And by the time I finish my smoothie, I'm ready for lunch and there's something more, like some rice or some veggies, anything else that I can use to fuel myself. That's E, eating, the first E. And then A is avoid mood-altering substances. For myself, that's been definitely less alcohol consumption, for sure. There are many reasons why you might want to consider that in your training process, first off. When it comes to physiological other considerations, I mean, you get dopamine from achieving goals, you get that endorphin rush from a run, but I think one thing that people often overlook with alcohol consumption is that serotonin, our body's natural antidepressant, a lot of that is produced in your stomach. That doesn't come from your brain, and that's only something I learned over the past few months. So no wonder alcohol is such a depressant, because you're already kind of killing some of those natural feel-good chemicals and hormones that your body is trying to produce. So I avoid too much alcohol. For me, it's caffeine too. I'm pretty caffeine sensitive, so if I'm pounding down coffee or energy drinks first thing in my day at the office, I'm getting way too jittery and wound up.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help me much. So I try to put that in moderation. So that's A. S is sleep. Sleep is our best known performance enhancing drug. If you can get that REM sleep, that's going to help you recover from that stressful day at work, that stressful run. Sometimes your body doesn't know the difference between the two. And if you're kind of taking that caffeine consumption and that alcohol consumption into consideration, odds are your sleep is probably going to improve to some degree. And if it's not, then there's probably other interventions you can take. I know a lot of people are coming into the office to talk about insomnia these days. For some folks, it's 3 or 4 hours on a good night. And I feel cranky when I get 6 or 7 hours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sleep is major. And then E is, the second E is exercise. What is your exercise going to look like? If it's getting out and running for 10 or 15 minutes, well, right now gyms are closed. I guess I have a pretty good alternative that I can, you know, mention, at least in my personal life. So my brother is somebody who loves going to the gym. That was his escape. He's definitely built differently than me. He's a little bit stockier, about 5'10 and 240. I'm around 6'3 and 170, and it's very clear that I don't do many. I don't spend much time at the gym. I'm not bench pressing or squatting or doing any of that. But right now his gym is closed, so he has kettlebells at home. Earlier today he texted me that he did a 4-mile ruck around the neighborhood with a 50-pound backpack on.
Wow.
He took the kettlebell and he dropped it in his backpack and threw some other weights in there and just went and walking around for 4 miles. So for nice. Those that are really upset about their gym being closed, I want to ask you, what can you do to help yourself and where that frustration is coming from? I mean, I really hear you if you're in the fitness industry and you're counting on that for a paycheck and to get by and survive. Believe me, I hear you. But if the biggest thing that you're upset about right now is your gym being closed, there are alternatives. And I'm getting a bit tangential here, but yeah, that is the second E in please, exercise. So I think that's one tool that I use to kind of break it down. And if you improve one of those letters, odds are that's going to correlate with one of the other ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there for sure. Definitely worth noting all of those aspects of the PLEASE acronym for sure, and something to follow.
Especially for runners, you know, it's like I think so many runners are always looking for a way to make running easier, just as a rough generalization. And I think any one of those kind of topics helps achieve that.
Yeah, just finding some way to get out and move your body. For myself, more often than not, I think last year when I checked in with my 3-year streak, I put a certain number on. I looked back at all of my runs, and I want to say at least a fifth of them, maybe even 25% of my runs, were 1 or 2 miles. I have a lot of what I call maintenance days, but active recovery.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mutual friend here, Nick. He once told me that if there's 24 hours in a day and I go for an hour long run, I still have 23 other hours to recover. And that's relative, of course. I'm not getting out for an hour every day, but to some extent, I see his point where earlier I asked myself, do you have 15, 20 minutes laying around where you can use to step outside and move yourself to some extent?
Yeah, for sure. I was just trying to think. So with regards still on the pandemic pacing idea, do you see some of that in your practice? And is there, because I imagine that you do, and you've kind of brushed on it a little bit here, but is there a variety of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not quite struggles that people have with it, or does it just come in a lot of different ways? The hardships that people have with the pandemic, does it come in a lot of different ways?
Oh, it definitely does. I think that the biggest things I've seen so far have been some of what I touched on earlier with that working from home lifestyle, where you have that lack of boundaries. There's a lack of transitions in some way, shape, or form that impacts your relationship with everyone else in your household. Our couples referrals list is a lot longer than it usually is, and that's a bit concerning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely impacts in many different ways. Go on.
I'm curious, when you talk about transitions, explain what that is a little bit. I mean, I think I have an idea, but explain what that is to our listeners when you talk about like these daily transitions that we maybe don't have anymore.
Well, for me, it was I end my day by shutting my laptop. And I also mentioned I'm very lousy about getting up and running in the morning. So I'm a bit more of an afternoon runner, which also means right now I'm running in the dark because I'm usually not done until 4 or 5 o'clock. But that's how I, practice some sort of transition. Before pre-pandemic, a lot of us were getting our transitions from getting up, showering, leaving the house, commuting to work, sitting down at the office, and seeing your coworkers, seeing your colleagues, seeing people besides everyone that you're living with at the time. Or if you're living alone, that's even more difficult because, like, who are you seeing them? I've talked to some people where they break down and they get emotional because they talked to someone at the grocery store. They start to recognize the same cashier, and that's the first person I've talked to in person in a week. And I'm like, oh man. So I think those are some of the transitions that come to mind for me, like doing something where you are shifting and getting up, getting active, or simply leaving the house in some cases.
Mm. Yeah. So those transitions are kind of that in between space between some of the more, I don't know, defined and bigger tasks of our daily lives, or just bigger goings on of our daily lives. But those transitions are kind of things in between that we've lost a little bit, but turns out are pretty meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot more gray area when you don't have those transitions. It's a lot more black and white where it's cut clear and dry that I am here at the office and I'm doing my work here. But if I'm at home and I shut my laptop and I go somewhere else and I come right back to where my laptop is,
yeah,
really like flipping the switch on and off with my work. I could sit right down again and immerse myself in my work. So that process of clocking out and clocking back in, there's a lot more gray area and uncertainty with that. And I think those are some of the observations that I've seen in my practice and heard the most of.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, as a mental health professional, Kyle, how often do you recommend running to your clients or patients?
Well, I think it depends on everything else that's going on in their life. Maybe they did run before. Maybe running just isn't in the cards for themselves. Maybe there's some chronic illness or other condition where running's not the first thing I'm going to suggest to them. But in some way, shape, or form, I'm a pretty firm believer in like a mind and body connection where a sound body is a sound mind. I'm pretty sure that's even like ASIC's slogan, isn't it?
It is, yep.
Mm-hmm. So just getting a little bit more in touch with the somatic and whether it's like a breathing pattern when you're running, it's a breathing pattern in meditation, kind of getting in touch with that. And one thing that I learned in the past couple months is related to something called the polyvagal theory. It's associated with the vagus nerve in your body, also called the wandering nerve. It connects to many different organs and systems, including your eyes, your heart, your lung, your lungs, your stomach, and how your breath has a lot of influence with which state your nervous system is using. So we have a parasympathetic nervous system and a sympathetic. And the sympathetic is the active, to some degree, it's that fight or flight response. I'm running, I'm avoiding something, I'm under pressure. And that parasympathetic is you're relaxed and at ease, you're digesting your food, you're just calm and at peace. And your breath has a lot of say in which state you're in. Every time you inhale, your heart rate can increases ever so slightly. And every time you exhale, it's like taking that foot off of the, it's like putting your foot on the brake. Your heart rate declines, and you're sending cues to that vagus nerve, which sends cues to your brain that, hey, I can relax. I'm at ease. So when people put an emphasis on that exhale being longer than that inhale, that's why. It brings your heart rate down. It helps you to relax. Mm-hmm. So I might not always recommend running to people, but for those who are interested in it, I guess I won't necessarily push it, but I'll encourage them to try and use that PLEASE acronym to what is your exercise going to look like? And if not, how else can we get more in touch with our body and notice some of those cues you're sending yourself?
Right.
So, Kyle, you'll be interested to hear this, given what you just said is with the heart rate and breath and everything. So this past summer, I helped out with some high school kids with some of their training, and I had them do the Bagley Jewel.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good. That's a really good workout, but it's a tough one, as you know. And I would stand at the top of the hill before they begin their jog down, and I would tell them, just relax your brain, relax your breathing. You can control your heart rate with your mind, with your breathing. You can slow it down on purpose with practice and just easing down. And yep. I'd preach that to them as they start their jog down the hill. Just slow your breathing down. Your heart rate will follow. Just slow everything down. Mm-hmm. And you can do that. I have a pulse ox. You know what those pulse ox things are? It goes mm-hmm. on your fingertip. I have one of those at home, and I'll just practice trying to slow my heart rate down just mentally. And you can do it. You're not successful all the time, but you can bring your heart rate down just by thinking about it, just by slowing down. It's pretty cool to watch happen.
Yeah. I think the first example I saw of that was when I read Eat and Run by Scott Jurek. Mm-hmm. I think one of the first or the couple chapters in there, he talked about going and seeing his doctor for high blood pressure. And I think it was his mom or something that he read that said, you can drop your blood pressure by using your mind, by breathing. And he would practice that when he went to see the doctor. And eventually he got to the point where he could get himself back off of his high blood pressure medications, even as an adolescent.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It's pretty cool stuff. I believe it 100%.
Yep.
I think it's one of those, you talk about things that have in your tool. Everybody's got that tool. Everybody has a brain. So everybody has the ability to do things like that. It's just practice.
Yep. The analogy I've used this year has been, this is a lot of resiliency and an evaluation of the tools you're using. Like right now, we are all in a fire. We're in a forge. And if we are a metaphorical sword in that forge, mm-hmm. you know, every sword needs a certain degree of a lot of heat applied to it for it to be the tool that you want it to be, a sharp blade that is effective. But none of that is practical without some tools to help shape it and, you know, make the handle and sharpen that blade the way it needs to be. So all heat and no tools, not good. But if you have all the tools without any resistance either, it takes a little bit of a mind shift in some way to use this as an opportunity. But do you guys know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, sure.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's a good analogy. I think, you know, the ability to sort of sometimes reframe a little bit is super handy. And just simply trying to find that silver lining in the dark cloud.
Yeah. It's a tough year for a lot of us. It's been a challenging year. That's safe to say. In some cases, I've read that depression is up threefold in the United States alone. And it's okay to seek help if you feel like you're not okay. If those tools that you have in your kit right now aren't enough, I think that's why I'm in the field that I'm in. When I started out in school, I thought I would have been a physical therapist, but I took some of those science classes like physics and some of those upper level chemistry classes. That was my fork in the road that told me maybe you're not going to be in that sector of healthcare that you thought you would. And then eventually I transitioned to social work, and I think I've definitely found my calling as a therapist. And I'm glad that more people are beginning to see that as something that they can use and be a lot more open and comfortable with.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely been a much more positive shift in the acceptance of, you know, mental health help. And not only is it okay to seek help, I think it's like admirable to do that, because there has been some sort of negative stereotypes in the past, which, you know, we're starting to see we're wrong to have those negative stereotypes. So anybody who's kind of seeking that kind of help nowadays, I really tip my cap to them. It requires some courage on their part, and that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. It's okay to not be okay.
Yep.
Sure. Check your tools. Check your burnout. Check out where you are on that burnout index. And right now is probably as good of a time as ever to start seeing a therapist or have some of these conversations with yourself, with others, and, you know, setting yourself up for success when things begin to look a little bit different, when that finish line becomes a little bit more clear. Me and my supervisors and a lot of people at our practice right now, we're thinking about the second wave. I know in April and May, that's a pretty commonly used term. That second wave's coming, but what is it? It's the second wave of mental health.
Yeah.
For your nurses, for your teachers, for those in the trenches, on the front lines, police officers, firefighters, everybody, really. So where do you go for that? And I hope that you are open to having more of these conversations. And I want to thank you guys, you know, first off, for at least having an open mind to talking about this.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important. And I know a lot of our listeners will appreciate hearing what you have to say, Kyle. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what's next for you on the running radar. What's your big plan? You've always got something.
I always have something up my sleeve, don't I?
That's right, you do.
Yeah, a lot of my inspiration this year has came from other people. And I think, like, getting back to the sense of community that Duluth has, a lot of my ideas have came from them. I know recently you had Chris Rubish on, and that 10-week challenge that I mentioned earlier was the Leadville 100,000-foot challenge, which took 10 weeks to complete 100,000 feet of elevation gain. I completed that. Even rewinding further from there, earlier this year I did a virtual Last Runner Standing event that Kim and Andy Holak put on. Really cool idea. They got people on from Norway and all over the planet. And just so happens that the winner of the race was from Hermantown. So we represented on a global format there. So those were two big races that I did this year. I did Surf the Murph in October in my hometown of Savage, Minnesota.
In person, right?
Yeah, in person. It was 25 people per race, spread out throughout the entire weekend. So my race was first Friday morning. They did the 25K later that afternoon. And it was also my first victory. That's the first time I've ever won a race. So very anticlimactic. Tony's holding up a W with his fingers right now. Super anticlimactic because there is no one there at the finish line. So I'm like pumping my fist like, yeah, I won. And the race director comes out like, yeah, we think you're the first one to finish. Like, oh my God, I hope so. Unless somebody snuck ahead of me. So that was a really cool experience. But to be honest, for next year, I don't think I have something up my sleeve right now. The only thing I can think of is I want to close out the year with some of those miniature goals I've set for myself. I want to exceed last year's mileage number, which is I ran 2,025 miles last year. So I need to at least exceed that. So I'll run at least 2020 in 2020. I'm on pace for my first year of 200,000 feet of vert, which I got in those 10 weeks in June through August. So those are some of my miniature goals. But I think it all depends on what happens over the next few months here, what that next race might be. As far as I know, Grandma's Marathon hasn't closed yet. I always have an itch for a starting line, especially Grandma's was my first marathon, so I have some interest in doing Grandma's. If there's another virtual Last Runner Standing, I might do that. But I think right now it's going to be a lot of wait and see. There's a different ultra marathon in Wisconsin that I have my eyes on in May that I might want to jump into. But a lot of it's a wait and see, one day at a time, week by week approach right now. One day at a time. I honestly think I annoy some of my clients with how often I say that, like, as cliche. One day at a time. I mean, I didn't get to 1,546 days by fast forwarding to day 1,001. It's a cumulative every 24 hours approach.
Yeah. Right.
Well, sometimes cliches become cliches because they're true.
Yep. That's a fact.
All right. What else? You got any other questions or anything?
I think we covered a lot, and I think that the conversation was super useful for runners and non-runners alike, and I don't have any other questions, Tony.
All right, well, Kyle, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll get a chance to, I don't know, run into you on a run somewhere, or hopefully even actually be able to safely hang out in person soon.
Yeah. The sooner the better, honestly. Running at least 6 feet apart, of course.
That's true.
Yeah. This is a great time to run with your mask on. It keeps your face a little bit warmer. Yeah. I might have that same frost beard that I'm pretty well known for, I suppose. But I guess for any listeners that are curious in terms of reaching out to me or where to find me, of course, I'm on Instagram, Kyle Sather, SatherKyle. My email, if you want to follow up on any of these questions or have any referrals or interest in doing therapy with myself or somebody else on staff, I work at Insight Counseling, and you can find us at insightcounselingduluth.com. Or you could email me directly at kyle@insightduluth.com, and I would help you take the next step from there. But that's if you're curious and interested. And, of course, confidentiality involved in that as well. So,
great.
Yep. Thanks again, guys, for having me. This is really cool to talk about it, and I'm glad that that you were the platform for this conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle. Absolutely.
All right, and that will do it for episode number 30 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Again, want to thank our sponsor, Austin Jarro, for helping us out and keeping this podcast going. Want to thank Kyle Sather for joining us on the interview section. Some really cool information and thoughts from Kyle on, you know, hopefully how we can all handle this crazy year, in just an unprecedented year of running for all of us. And again, Mike, thanks to you for the work that you do on the podcast, editing this all down, actually getting it out there for everybody. And speaking of, I hope everybody subscribes, you know, hopefully you subscribe in whatever podcast platform you utilize, and then they just automatically upload for you. That'd be great. Mike, you got anything to add?
Definitely. Thanks to everyone you mentioned and all our listeners. And I hope everyone out there is able to get out for a run or many in the next 3 weeks. And until then, we'll see you out there.
Yeah, and happy holidays, everybody. We won't talk to you again until at least after Christmas.
Yeah, right. Till then.